It's a pretty obvious thing to take the Mona Lisa, give her a milk mustache, and ask, "Got milk?" But great paintings of the past inspire advertisers in more subtle ways as well. Judith Kampfner found connections between glossy catalogs and pictures by the Dutch masters. The painters, I mean, not the cigars.
Lisa Homer is a New York food stylist.
I created a little puddle of honey that's a beautiful amber color, and that has some nice highlights in it.
A smooth oval dollop of honey, a soft light shines through it. Homer cooks and arranges food for photo shoots. In this photo, there's a waterfall of objects.
Then you have a leaf that is not edible, but adds a pretty texture on the plate. And then you have something that's a little bit taller for a different height yet, which is a fig. And part of it is cut open, and that has a certain allure when you see something cut open, and it kind of draws someone into the photo.
And the eye moves on to the linen cloth on the oak table. It's restful and satisfying.
This particular photo, I think because we did use sort of a charcoal or chocolate-colored background, I think that's very similar to what you might see in some of the 17th century still-life painters.
Like a painter, Homer uses artificial backdrops and revelatory lighting to pick up different textures. This aesthetic was pioneered by Dutch still-life painters from the 17th century, like Jan Leavens and Floris van Dyck, who excelled at cheeses, or William Claus Heder, whose specialty was silverware. These aren't household names because even in their day, still-life painters were always considered commercial and at the bottom of the food chain. But Mariette Westerman fell in love with the old master's food and flower paintings as a young child in the Netherlands. She now directs the Institute of Fine Arts at New York University.
If you look at a Dutch still-life painting by someone like Willem Claes Heda, for example, who tended to gather together wonderful silver vessels and glass and opaque things next to translucent things and so forth, soft tablecloth next to hard metal, a lot of attention to sheen. That sort of thing always strikes me as very prevalent in, say, your average catalog for Pottery Barn or Williams-Sonoma.
When you see an artistic arrangement in a store window, the everyday objects and food are more than consumer goods arranged for sale. They become part of a picture, even if the vendor might not know it.
When you see those still lifes in the Union Square Green Market, they're still lifes indeed. The apples have been stacked just so, if the merchant is smart about how he or she puts it out there. The vision has in some way been informed already by still life.
Representations of domestic objects have been around since antiquity. What the 17th century Dutch had, which they exploited to the full, was a type of paint.
Oil, a wonderfully slick medium that you can move around and that you can build up in many layers that create that extremely sensuous sheen. The softness of a peach, the crumpledness of a piece of paper. That kind of capacity is really developed in oil paint. It would be wrong to say that this thing was invented in the Netherlands, but they ran with it.
In Amsterdam, the treasure house of art is the Rijksmuseum. Their specialist in still life is Taco Dibbets.
This painting is incredibly complex and has a very lavish table with fantastic pastries on it, oysters, the peeled lemon, where the artist shows his ability of painting this beautiful lemon skin, which is very rough, and they often show it with rough paint. So you have a rough yellow paint, which shows the structure of the lemon. Also, the oysters is a subject that was painted, of course, because oysters were found in the Netherlands, but also because it's a challenge to the artist to paint this watery substance of the oyster.
Lucky for the Dutch that the oyster was a staple, but they were importing much produce which they did, in fact, consider exotic. Exploration of the East and the New World was at its height, and botanists recorded everything in microscopic detail. Scientific curiosity filtered down to the still-life painters, who liked to show that they also could dissect objects. The cut-out sections helped to draw the eye into the food. Modern gourmet ingredients aren't very different.
We see in a fig that has bursted open with the red meat inside.
It's much more interesting to show a whole cake with a slice cut out of it, and to show the interior and the layers and the texture of the crumb and crumbs on the plate.
there are these objects that Peter Klaas particularly loved, and one of those was the painting of bread and the crumbled bread, which we have here, or a pastry broken open, which the contents fall out of.
In the 1970s and 80s, art historians gave philosophical interpretations to Dutch still lifes. Each food had a symbolic meaning. These were celebrations of God's creation or warnings of the transience of life. Nowadays, art critics like Mariette Westerman see still life differently. They think that these were very skillful and beautiful, but essentially commercial pictures, celebrating domestic upscale life.
I see the paintings as both about that consumer culture in some way, that new consumer culture of where everybody could have more glassware, more silver and so forth, but also they are themselves consumer objects of a very high luxury end.
These were aspirational pictures. Even if a middle-class householder in Amsterdam couldn't afford Chinese bowls, fine goblets, and rare fruits, he could feel he owned what was in his painting if he hung the image of them on his wall. The pages of a shiny housewares catalogue today, or the photos in food advertising on a billboard, are more transient, but effectively they give us the same messages. The overflowing dinner table, succulent ripe foods amongst gorgeous furnishings, these are the good life, made visible in two dimensions. For Studio 360, I'm Judith Kampfner.
You can find images of some Dutch still lifes through our website, studio360.org.